girl, I can tell by the look in your eyes that you're in a land of confusion right now, and you're thinking about throwing it all away. But I'm here to tell you, don't give up. As a matter of fact, as long as you don't lose my number, then you and I can still have a big time. At least for one more night. We don't have to go to some expensive restaurant. You know what I mean? No jacket required, no fancy dress. Just take me home. And tonight, we can listen to the red rain falling outside, lashing against our windows like a sledgehammer as we cherish the invisible touch of our earbuds when we hit play together. And after listening to Jason and Dee on the Surely You Can't Be Serious podcast, then you know it's only a matter of time before I'm in too deep, Sue. What, your name's not Sue? Sue Sudie? Oh, well, that doesn't matter, just as long as you know that my name is Deaf Dave.
Okay, Dee, before we get started on today's episode, I've got a couple of trivia questions for you. I think this is pertinent. I think it's interesting, okay? So can you name the last number one hit of the 1970s?
No.
Okay. It's Rupert Holmes, the Escape, the Pina Colada song.
Oh, right.
Right?
Yeah.
Which, at some point, we got to get together with Brad Moore and do that one.
We've covered a song that was written by Rupert Holmes, not sung by Rupert Holmes. It's on our Patreon page. Go to patreon.com/Shirley Podcast. Not backslash, just regular slash. Surely podcast and sign up for as little as $5 a month.
Okay. So the last number one hit of the 70s, Rupert Holmes.
Do you like pina coladas? Yep. Got it.
All right. The first number one hit of the 1980s. Do you have any idea what that is?
Not the same song.
All right. I consider myself a musical expert in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know this song. It's called Please Don't Go by the KC Sunshine Band.
Okay. Well, I know the band, but I don't know.
Right.
I don't know that song.
All right. Can you name the last number one hit of the 1980s?
No.
Another Day in Paradise by Phil Collins.
Oh, okay.
Can you name the first number one hit of the 1990s?
No.
Another Day in Paradise by Phil Collins.
All right, so it's still number one.
He bridged the gap from the 80s to the 90s.
Gotcha, okay? Yes.
So we're obviously going to be talking about Phil Collins today, which I'm excited to do.
Yep.
Can you name the artist who had the most number one hits in the 1980s?
Was it Phil Collins?
Actually, it was Michael Jackson, who had 10. He had 5 off of Bad, which is the crux of my Bad versus Thriller argument.
Right.
But Phil Collins had 7 number one hits.
He had more U.S. top 40 singles than any other artist throughout the 80s, including Michael Jackson.
There is a case to be made that Phil Collins, with Genesis and by himself, was the most consistent hit maker of the 1980s.
Yes. And, I mean, we're talking about a mega rock star at the time of mega rock stars. MTV, full blast. Top 40 radio, full blast. And have you seen this guy?
I know, I love him.
I mean, he's short.
He's balding. He's chubby.
He can't dance. He can't sing.
He can sing. Come on, he can
he's
sing.
He's just an ordinary man.
He does talk like Dick Van Dyke and Mary Poppins a little bit. So I do. I told you, I said he feels like the everyman representing the crowd, like the fans.
Yeah.
You know, Peter Gabriel is like this guy on this different plane, and he's making music, and we just like, oh, he's a rock star.
Yeah.
Feels like the mechanic who just happened to get this amazing gig and knows how to make incredible rock
songs. Let's just be clear. I mean, I got a list here.
Yeah.
Let's just be clear about how big this is. Okay, he is one of only 3 recording artists who have sold over 100 million records, both as solo artists and separately as principal members of a band. Can you name the other two?
George Michael?
No.
Michael Jackson?
Yes. The girl is mine.
Paul McCartney.
You got it. Yep. Paul McCartney is the other one. He has won 8 Grammy Awards, 6 Brit Awards, 2 Golden Globes, 1 Academy Award, and a Disney Legend Award, which probably meant a lot more back when he got it than it does now. He has won an Ivor Novello Award. He's won the British Academy of Songwriters, Composers, and Authors Award. He has a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. He's in the Songwriters Hall of Fame and Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as a member of Genesis in 2010.
Not too shabby. He also managed to make Amy Mann jealous because of the gorilla love song that he did.
cartoon monkey love song.
That's it. I broke down the 1980s. I just went year by year.
Okay.
Between Genesis and Phil Collins.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Quick trivia question for you. Can you name the only year of the 1980s that he did not have a top 15 hit, either with Phil Collins or Genesis?
Yes, I know this. It is 1981, which is crazy because that's the year that In the Air Tonight came out, which is his most iconic song.
That was the only song that didn't reach the top 15.
Yeah, which is nuts.
Which is nuts.
Like, how did that not happen?
I think it was just a little bit ahead of its time.
Obviously, yes.
And I think maybe Miami Vice gave it the rocket fuel it needed to get there.
Yeah, and by the way, guys, we are here talking about No Jacket Required. This is a Genesis Trinity, if you will.
That's right.
It is a Genesis Trinity because we are talking about Peter Gabriel So, which we did last week with our great friend Chad Briggs.
What's up, Chad?
Fantastic episode. And then next week we're going to be talking about Genesis and Invisible Touch. All of these albums came out within roughly a year of each other.
That's right.
It's crazy how much you were hearing Phil Collins' voice on the radio at this time. And when we did our episode on So, I started off by saying, hey, as you know, these guys were both the former or current lead singers of Genesis, but Peter Gabriel had Phil come and do drums for several of his songs on what we call the Melt album. They're all called Peter Gabriel until So happens. But I told that story back then. Go back and listen to that. But then on this album, we got Peter Gabriel joining the band for a song. You know, it's crazy how these guys, they're just friends. They're decent guys who happen to also be mega prolific rock stars.
That's right. So today we're talking about No Jacket Required.
Yep.
This album was released February 18th of 1985.
Yeah.
It sells 25 million copies, 12 million in the United States alone. It's the second biggest selling album of 1985. Can you name the first?
85. No, I don't know.
It's Brothers in Arms by Dire Straits.
Oh, perfect. You know? Perfect. Oh, and that reminds me. Okay, so we also just a few weeks ago finished with our Heart versus Brothers in Arms episode. We had one of our loyal listeners, Mr. Lee Matthews, reach out to us by email. He is from across the pond over
What's
in
up,
the UK.
Lee? Yeah.
And he sent us an email going, hey, Jason, Jay, I know you are a Miami Vice fan, and Dee, you'll appreciate this too.
Right.
And he sent us a clip from Miami Vice that used Brothers in Arms, the song, the last song.
How do we
Brothers
miss that?
Arms, I don't know. Great job on catching our miss on that one. And holy cow, what an impactful moment in the Miami Vice canon that was. I mean, gee, many, it was rough. But I told Lee at the time, when you hear that Peter Gabriel So episode, if you take a shot every time Jason says the word So or mentions Miami Vice, you'll be unconscious before the episode is over.
You're welcome, everybody. So the title for this album is No Jacket Required.
Yes.
I've got a funny story on how that came to be.
Yes.
He's hanging out with Robert Plant.
Robert Plant, the lead singer of Led Zeppelin and the Honey Drippers.
And the Honey Drippers, that's right.
If you're into the 80s, Robert Plant.
We talked about that. That's right. But he's hanging out. They're at the Pump Room in Chicago.
Yes.
He said Robert Plant is wearing a garish jacket.
Garish.
Garish.
It's a very British word.
It is. I just listened to his audiobook, so you might have some strange words creeping in this episode, okay?
It's flamboyant, maybe, is a good word for what I am imagining Robert Plant is wearing as his jacket.
Garish is the word he is.
Garish.
And as he's trying to enter the hotel, this is the Ambassador West, I believe, in Chicago, he goes to hang out and have a few drinks at the hotel bar with Robert Plant and their buddies.
Yeah.
And the maitre d' comes up and says, excuse me, sir, you're not wearing a jacket.
Right.
And he's wearing a leather jacket. Mm-hmm. He said it was a couple $1,000s. I mean, it was not shabby.
Right.
He's like, I am wearing a jacket. And they're like, no, a proper jacket. And he turns to Robert Plant and he looks at this weird
garish
jacket he's got on. Robert Plant's like, see ya. And so Phil said that they would not let him in, number one. Mm-hmm. And that's as mad as he has ever been in his life.
Wow.
Super mad.
Yeah.
So when he's doing the rounds with David Letterman and Johnny Carson, of course, he's retelling the story.
Right.
They wouldn't let me in. I'm not wearing a jacket. It's too stuffy. They wouldn't let me in. Mm-hmm. And so finally, the Ambassador Hotel sent him a jacket and said, please stop repeating this story.
Right.
You can come in. You can come in anytime you want. Just please stop telling this story.
Right, right. Well, and there was another incident that happened just before that incident, which is probably why it made him so mad.
Okay.
But he was on vacation down in the Caribbean with his family and tries to go into the hotel bar there. And they say, sir, you'll have to have a jacket. And he's like, well, I don't have a jacket. And they're like, well, why not? And he said, well, because I'm on holiday. And it's the Caribbean. Like, why would anybody have right. a jacket down
I'm
here?
Wearing flip-flops.
They didn't let him in there. I think maybe they gave him a ridiculous oversized, I mean, because he's not a big guy, jacket that he wore there. And so, yeah.
No jacket required
right.
to enjoy this album.
Yep.
Okay?
Okay, album cover. You know why he looks the way that he does? Why he has that red face on there?
Tell me.
Because he wanted to look hot and bothered. Those were his words. I want to look hot and bothered. So, I don't know that I would ever say that, especially not for my album cover. I want to look hot and bothered.
I did hear him talk about how he wanted to make a dance album, or at least something with some up-tempo tracks.
Yeah, as we'll talk about a little bit later on as the episode goes on, his two previous albums had all kinds of stuff to do with heartbreak. And so this one, he was looking for something a little on the cheery, more dancey side.
He called those divorce albums?
Yeah.
And he wanted to just kind of get away from the divorce albums.
Right.
So this is actually produced by Hugh Padgham.
Yep. And who I mentioned again in our last episode when we were talking about Peter Gabriel. So Hugh Padgham was actually working on the Melt album on Intruder whenever he and Phil inadvertently discovered the magic of the gated drum, which if you don't know that term, you will know the sound because it is the sound of the drums in The Air Tonight and about 10 or 12 dozen different albums of the 1980s because it became the sound of the 80s, that gated drum beat, which, by the way, they recorded this album at the Townhouse, which everybody went to that place to record so they could get that identical drum sound that Phil Collins and Hugh Padgham had put together in Face Value.
Very good. You know, I was doing some research on the Pump Room in Chicago.
Yeah.
It actually closed down in 2017, sadly.
Uh-huh.
But I came across a sentence where it said, the Pump Room has hosted many celebrities from across the world, including Morris the Cat. You remember Morris the Cat?
Morris the Cat from the Nine Lives cat food?
The cat food commercials.
Yes, Morris the Cat. Wow.
By the way, one of the artists who recorded in Montserrat.
Yes.
Which we talked about in our Brothers in Arms.
Yes.
Was Eric Clapton.
Yes.
And producer Phil Collins.
Right. Yeah, he had just worked with Eric Clapton producing his album just before he did this one. And then in between this one and Eric Clapton, he worked with Philip Bailey, who we talked about a little bit on our top five of 1985, because Philip Bailey had a big hit, probably because Phil Collins was singing on the song.
Yeah. Easy Lover.
Easy Lover.
What a great song, man. Fantastic song.
It definitely, it should be in the conversation for great songs of that year, no question.
By the way, that reached number two in 1985.
Easy Lover did?
Easy Lover.
Yeah.
I believe kept out by I Want to Know What Love Is by Foreigner.
Yeah, which
pretty,
of course.
Pretty big song.
Yeah, I've talked about that one a few times.
But still, that could have been four number ones in the same year for Phil Collins.
Right.
85 was big.
Yeah.
All right, before we get started on the track listing, I got a funny story for you.
Okay.
As Phil's traveling around doing the interview circuit for No Jacket Required, mm-hmm. some reporters noted that he resembles Bob Hoskins.
Yes.
Or Danny DeVito.
Agree.
Right?
Well, I mean, height-wise anyway, yeah.
Okay. You know, of course, they're all slightly balding. They're kind of stocky. They're short, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And so Phil made the comment that we could play the Three Bears. Right? They actually, like, DeVito contacted him about maybe doing a live-action Three Bears with Kim Basinger as Goldilocks.
Wow.
And Bob Hoskins and Danny DeVito and Phil Collins as the Three Bears.
I love it. I love it.
All right.
Okay, you ready to jump into this album?
Track number one.
Studio. Okay, so let me just start by saying what a great 80s sounding drum beat we have coming out of the gate here, right?
That's fantastic.
But if I can pull back on the range just for a second before we dive into how good this song is, because it is great.
Yes.
That's a drum machine. Like, I'm listening to a drum machine.
Of course.
I didn't know. I mean, I knew Phil Collins was a drummer.
Yes.
And I knew that he's a good drummer. But until we started researching Genesis, my familiarity with Genesis was the 80s Genesis, where they were all pop and none of the prog rock that they did back in the 70s, right? And so we'll talk about, when we do our Genesis episode, we'll talk about him getting involved with Genesis and how all of that happened. But on the in-between with Genesis, he played for a band called Brand X. Yes. Have you heard of this?
I've heard of the band Brand X, yes.
Okay, so I caught little bits of the Phil Collins, A Drummer First documentary, and kind of ended up in the middle. I think you were probably watching it on YouTube at the same time, so we overlapped there.
Right.
But it was Michael Jackson's drummer, and he's talking about how he picked up the Brand X album and was blown away by how good the drumming was, and so he had to go look and see who this drummer was, and he's like, some guy named Phil Collins, because it was 1976, and unless you were a big Genesis fan, you probably didn't know who Phil Collins was.
Right.
I mean, I've heard Phil's 80s drumming. This blew my mind. So I came away from that going, holy crap. Like, they say he's a drummer first. Oh, heck yeah, he was. I mean, I'm amazed. Like, he's doing a double bass tap well before Lars Ulrich is even probably got his own drum kit.
Yeah, right.
And of course, I immediately called James Buckley and I was like, James, you're our on-call drumming expert and sometimes co-host. I need to know. He's like, oh yeah. Like, in the mid 70s, Phil Collins and Bill Bruford were the top of the prog rock jazzing drum pyramid.
Phil was the Genesis drummer.
Yep.
Happy to be the drummer.
Yep.
Happy to be kind of the background vocalist. But when you're replacing Peter Gabriel, they need to find a singer. He doesn't really want the job. He says, how about we just do instrumentals? And they're like, we're not doing instrumentals. What are you right. talking about?
Right.
We got to find a singer. Well, they would interview singers. They'd find guys. And he's like, no, you need to do it more like this. And he would sing it.
Yeah, because he did all the backup for Peter Gabriel. And so he was like, this is the way you do it. And he would show them and they couldn't get it.
Right.
And they're like, Phil, you're singing better than everybody else. And he was like, okay, well, let me give it a shot.
Yeah, let me give it a shot.
Yeah.
Let me give it a shot. And yeah. Then what do we get?
Album that came out, I mean, people thought the band was dead when Peter Gabriel left. He leaves and their very first album is a better seller than any album that they'd had before.
That's right.
That.
That's right. Great. When they discovered their drummer could also be the singer, he said it was like finding a $5 bill on the couch.
It's probably a little better than
right.
Great.
So Sussudio was yes. the first single released in the UK, second single released in the US. This is released in April of 1985 mm-hmm. in the US. It hits number one 4th of July weekend, 1985. This 1985 top 10 is killer. Okay.
Just to take you back, this is July of 1985. You just saw Back to the Future for the first
That's
time.
That's it, right?
Or the second time,
or the Goonies.
The third time.
Yeah.
And you just got in your car and you turned on the radio and you're listening to Phil Collins' song 9 times out of 10.
That's it. That's it. So let me give you, actually, I'm going to start at number 12. You've got
yeah.
Goonies Are Good Enough by Cyndi Lauper.
Okay, yeah.
Which sure. we just talked about. Go yep. back and listen to that.
Yeah.
Number 11, Glory Days by Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah. yeah
Check
yeah.
out our Born in the USA podcast.
Mm-hmm.
You have number 10, Angel by Madonna.
Okay.
You have Voices Carry at number 9 by Till Tuesday.
Yep. Don't forget to sign up for our Patreon.
Number 8, Every Time You Go Away by Paul Young.
Yep.
Number 7, You Give Good Love, Whitney Houston's first number 1 hit. Mm-hmm. Number 6, Would I Lie to You by the Eurythmics. Check out our One Crazy Summer episode we just did.
Exactly.
Number 5, The Search Is Over by Survivor, which we're getting ready to cover against Chicago here in a few weeks.
Right, right.
Number 4, Heaven by Bryan Adams.
Yep. Go check. That's our most popular YouTube episode. It's the one without our faces on it.
Right? We're crazy. Saying something, right?
Yeah, crazy.
Number 3, Raspberry Beret by Prince.
There you go.
Number 2, A View to a Kill by Duran Duran. And number 1, Sussudio. That is a murderer's row of hits that we've talked about.
Yeah. I can tell you that in this past week, my son said to me as we're driving the car, if you could go back to any time in your life, when you go back to, I was like, 1985 was pretty dang good.
It's pretty good. In July of 85, this hits number 1.
Yeah.
He does receive some criticism because it sounds too similar to another song.
I can hear that.
Yeah?
Yeah, I can hear that. It's not a copy, but it doesn't. It definitely does have
it's dancey, it's up-tempo, yeah. It's synth-heavy.
Yeah. And, you know, we've talked about this a million times. Like, you know, Bon Jovi and Richie Sambora sat on a box of cassette tapes and went through them one by one to try to figure out what songs they could steal to make their own songs.
Right. That's right.
This is Olivia Rodrigo, who is a current artist right now, one of her songs came out that sounded very similar to an Elvis Costello song, and people were like, you need to sue her. And he was like, no, this is the language of rock and roll. Like, I probably borrowed that sound from somebody else who borrowed it else from
That's
somebody
right.
else.
That's right.
It's ridiculous. This is the way we build music. So, yeah, the fact that it's got a similar sound to 1999 is not a deal killer for me at all on this one.
What does Sussudio mean?
Yeah, no, I myself, actually, as I was listening to this probably a couple of years ago at this point, I was like, what is that? Like,
right.
What is that? So I went and looked it up, right? And this goes back to what I came in with is we're listening to a drum machine here. One of the world's top drummers, and he's using a drum machine. But the way that he came up with several of these songs, including Sussudio, was that he would do the drum beat and then he would just listen to it over and over again and try to improvise lyrics and melodies over the drum beat. And for this particular song, the scatting that he did, it's Sussudio.
Sussudio.
There is no one named Sussudio. It's just, that was the scatting, doobity bop
right.
bop, shibbity bop bop, that came out of his...
Sussudio. That's it.
That's what came out of his mouth. And when he went back to try to replace it with some other name, nothing worked. And, well, there you go.
Yeah. By the way, one of his daughters
uh-huh.
now has a horse named Sussudio.
Very nice. Okay, well, since you opened that door, I'm going to go ahead and bring this little nugget to you.
Okay.
So, you know, I asked you before the show, I was like, do you know who Mary Steenburgen is married to? And you said?
Ted Danson.
Do you know who she was married to before that?
No.
She was married to Malcolm McDowell.
Oh, yeah.
Clockwork Orange.
Yeah. Star Trek. He was Mr. Rourke on the reboot of Fantasy Island.
He was, yes. He's a very well-known British actor, right?
Yes.
And they had a child whose name is Charlie McDowell. By the way, if you look at his picture, he looks like an exact cross between Mary Steenburgen and Malcolm McDowell.
Okay.
And he is married to Lily Collins.
Yeah.
Phil's daughter, who is also a actress herself, has been in several, she was in a series.
She's the It Girl now.
Okay, so she was in The Blind Side as the daughter, and she's been in several other series.
Is Lily Collins in The Blind Side?
Yep, and so I'm just thinking to myself, in Phil's family tree, you've got Mary Steenburgen, you've got
Malcolm McDowell.
You've got, yes, Malcolm McDowell. You've got Ted Danson. he's got sons that are also major recording artists. I sent you a song today from Simon Collins, who had a band called Sound of Contact, has a very similar sounding voice to his dad. Nick Collins is the one who kind of helped produce the documentary that just came out. He is a very prolific drummer and played drums for Genesis when Phil lost his ability to do so.
Wow.
I mean, he has got an impressive lineup of family, and his brother is like a knighted cartoonist, like one of the most famous political and satirist cartoonists from the UK. Just passed away a couple years ago. Mm. And it's funny because if you look at him, he's got the same face, but he's like normal height. And so they stand together and it looks like twins.
You sent me like, it was like a one frame.
Uh-huh.
It was like something you would see in like Cosmo or even Playboy.
Right.
And I'm like, this is funny, D. What does this have to do with anything?
Exactly, right. Yeah.
But it's funny.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, Clive Collins. I see that right there.
There you go. Yeah.
Okay. I want to talk about the video for a second because I've told you, I think I've already said it, but Phil Collins has that very everyman type of quality.
Absolutely. Okay? Yes.
So they shot this video at
He's
place.
He's a very ordinary man.
Yes. Yes. So they shot this video at the Princess Victoria, which is a pub in London.
Okay.
Owned by Richard Branson.
Okay, Virgin Records, yep. Which produced this album, of course.
Yep. And it's like him and his band, and he's up there in front of like four people, and you can tell he just finishes a song, and there's like a smattering of like barely clapping. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, all right, thank you again, thank you, you know, the old... He says, well, we got one more song for you. This song's called Sussudio. And they're like, eh, whatever. And then when he starts playing, it draws a crowd and everybody's clapping. And this song is infectious. It's pop gold. It's fun. And the horns, you get the Phoenix horns from Earth, Wind, and Fire. I love it. It's fantastic.
It is a great album opener. Just shows what you can do with a drum machine and a little improv. It's incredible, really. Okay. And before we move on to the next song, one more tidbit on his family.
Yes.
Nick Collins. That played the drums for him when he couldn't play for Genesis.
Yes.
A year and a half ago, started a band called The Effect. Guitarist for The Effect is Trev Lukather, son of
Steve Lukather
of Toto. That is
correct. Oh, that's great. Okay, second song on the album. This song is called Only You Know and I Know.
Another killer.
Upbeat. You got the horns. You got the keys. You got the guitar. You've got the Phoenix horns.
Yep.
Which is from Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Okay.
So it's real strong horns that you get in those kind of soulful records.
Yep.
Dancy, poppy. It's good fun.
This song is, I really like how it picks up at the chorus. Like the verse is good. The chorus is great. Like he brings it in the chorus and I really like how it sounds.
He's got a knack for making infectious grooves, stuff we like to listen to. Whether you got irritated with Phil Collins in the 80s, it's because his songs were so successful. They're on the radio all the time. Now, there is a line in this song that he got from real life, and I thought this was funny.
Okay.
So, he met a girl at the Rainbow Club in L.A. She became his second wife. Her name is Jill Tavelman. But when she introduced him to her mother, he says, hi, how you doing, ma'am? I'm Phil Collins. She turned to her daughter and said, well, honey, as they say, love is blind.
I had not heard that story, but as soon as you went there, I was like, oh, no, I know what she's going to say.
Yeah.
Ouch.
Thank you.
Oh, jeez.
Okay, jeez. I've got to tell you this story in regards to the song Against All Odds.
Okay,
which I believe may be the best song of 1984. Okay. I absolutely love it. It's a beautiful power ballad. So for the Academy Awards, they contact Phil and they say, hey, Against All Odds is nominated for an Academy Award. And he was over the moon. Phil is a big movie buff.
Yeah.
He's a historian. He loves the Academy Awards. So he reroutes his whole tour so he can go and perform Against All Odds at the Academy Awards.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, well, you're not going to perform it. And he's like, what do you mean? I'm the singer, right?
Like, right.
This is my song. I wrote it. I sing it. Yeah. And for all history, that's how it works. And they're like, well, not this year. And he says, well, why not? Like, what's the reasoning? And they said, well, this is a movie event. We only want movie people involved with the Academy Awards. Does that make any sense to you at all?
No.
Okay.
Then why would you have an Academy Award for a song?
So, right, exactly. So, along with his rejection from performing this song, Denise Williams performs Let's Hear It for the Boy, and Ray Parker Jr. performs Ghostbusters.
Right.
So that doesn't hold any water.
No.
So leading up to the awards, he is pissed. Like, he's like, what's the deal? You guys are taking my song. Who is performing my song?
Right.
And they're like, well, we have a dancer who's going to lip sync it. He's like, what? So some strongly worded letters are sent back and forth. Anyway, he goes to the awards ceremony, and as it starts, all eyes are on him, right? And this poor dancer gets up there and does just a terrible, it's like maybe the most embarrassing performance of all time.
What the actual heck?
I know, right?
Like, she did something really good for somebody involved at the Academy to get this spot.
Yes, it's...
Oh, my gosh.
It's so insane. Anyway, the song loses to I Just Called to Say I Love You by Stevie Wonder.
That's
which
your favorite song.
I hate that song. I hate that song. And Phil came out pretty strong against that song. He said, Stevie Wonder's one of my heroes, but I have serious doubts that that song was actually written specifically for a movie.
Right.
So just kind of bad feelings all around for him.
Yeah.
The good news, in 2000, he eventually wins his Academy Award for You'll Be In My Heart.
Right.
He even got to sing it.
Yes.
Right. The bad news, that night, he beat the song Blame Canada, which is Trey Parker and Matt Stone, and they went scorched earth on him over that song.
Yeah, I bet. Also beat out an Amy Mann song, but you'll have to go check out our Patreon page to hear that story.
Monkey Love Song. All right. Next song on the album is a song called Long, Long Way to Go.
Okay, way to bring it back down.
It's pretty moody.
Yeah, right? I mean, we finished with two toe-tapping dance hits, and then we moved into a very dirge-like, politically motivated song.
This song is actually considered to be one of his most famous, well-known songs that was not released as a single.
Right.
This is also my first Miami Vice crossover. Okay?
Yes.
And in this song, it sounds heavy.
Yeah.
And so they used it for a heavy moment in Miami Vice when Tubbs' girlfriend and son were killed and he was at their funeral. So, it was used in Miami Vice.
Yeah.
And Phil Collins is, you know, got a heavy connection to Miami Vice. A lot of his songs were used. We talked about Peter Gabriel's songs in his use in Miami Vice. So here's a list of the songs of Phil Collins that were used in Miami Vice. Okay.
Yeah.
So you've got a song called I Don't Care Anymore. You've got Take Me Home, which we're going to talk about here in a second.
Yep.
You've got Long, Long Way to Go. You've got Against All Odds. You've got a song called Life is a Rat Race, which was a rewrite of a demo for this album that was originally called The Man with the Horn.
Oh, okay.
And then, of course, you've got In the Air Tonight, which may be the most iconic moment of Miami Vice history.
Right.
Okay? He played Phil the Shill.
Phil the Shill.
In, I think, season two of Miami Vice.
Right.
He's like a con man.
And just so that our listening audience knows, Phil is not a musician that became an actor. He's an actor that became a musician.
Tell me.
So when he was, I mean, when he was very young, he got his first drums, like he got a plastic drum at three, and by four and five, he got some real drums, and they were, you know, doing a makeshift drum set for him. But, and I sent you a cartoon that his brother had drawn of him pounding on the drum as a little kid, right?
Yes.
But he was an actor from a very early age. He played the part of the Artful Dodger in the musical Oliver at West End, like that, the Broadway of London is where he was performing. Like, so big bragging rights for his family that, hey, my kid is playing the Artful Dodger. And he was actually friends with Jack Wilde, who is the actor that played the Artful Dodger in the movie Oliver that came out in the 60s.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I'd do anything for you, dear, anything.
Yeah.
It's, and so when he became a teenager, older teenager, he decided, I don't want to be an actor anymore. Like, they had given him all kinds of training to be an actor because he had shown such promise as a little kid, you know, a very young man. And he's like, nope, I want to go try to be a musician instead.
He was in A Hard Day's Night, but was cut out.
Oh.
And then he got to go to Pinewood Studios. He got a part as an extra in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Okay.
The Ian Fleming kids book.
Right.
Cut out of that one as well.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, I guess they didn't like my face.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So, but yeah, young Phil was an actor.
Yeah.
And when he got this script from Miami Vice, you know, Miami Vice had a reputation of bringing in musical people and doing cameos.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, oh, yeah, that'd be fun. He gets the script. He's reading it. And he's like, I'm on every page.
Yeah.
And he contacts the director. He's like, I haven't acted in like 25 years. And he's like, oh, it'll be fun. You'll be doing it. You'll be fine.
Yeah.
And he has a major character on Miami Vice.
I mean, he goes on and is the star of his own movie.
We'll get to that here in a minute.
Okay.
Now, before we move on, I think this is a good chance to tell you, do you know who sings backup on this song?
This one has Sting on
it's
it,
Sting.
Correct?
That's right.
Yeah.
Sting and Phil Collins didn't know each other until they met when they recorded the Do You Know It's Christmas song.
Oh, Band-Aid, yeah.
Band-Aid, which was like a couple of months before this was recorded.
Uh-huh.
And they became fast friends. So when Live Aid came calling, and so Sting contacted him and says, hey, are you doing this Live Aid Bob Geldof thing? Mm-hmm. And Phil's like, yeah, I think I'm gonna. And Sting's like, well, let's do it together. So Phil and Sting decide they're going to team up and perform at Live Aid together as like a team.
Oh, okay.
Right? And so, of course, Sting had just broken up with the Police. He hasn't really established his band just yet, you know? Right. So, hey, here's my buddy Phil. Phil, you want to come on stage? Let's do a couple of songs. We'll do a couple of yours, a couple of mine, and we'll team up and we'll do it, which I think is really cool.
Yeah, fantastic.
Right? So they do In the Air Tonight. They do Long, Long Way to Go, this song.
Okay.
They do Against All Odds. And then they do Every Breath You Take together.
Nice.
Okay?
That's awesome.
Which I think is really cool.
Yeah, no, that's great.
Now then, Geldof says, hey, why don't you perform in Philadelphia as well? Okay? So leading up to this, he asked Phil, hey, you do it in London? If you hop on a Concorde, you could make it to Philadelphia in time, just barely, to perform both continents.
Oh, wow.
And so Phil's like, well, I mean, I don't want to be the only one who does this. He's like, no, Duran's going to do it too. He's like, oh, okay, well, that sounds like fun. I'll do it. Well, Duran bails out. And so, but Phil had already committed.
Yeah.
So he does these four songs with Sting.
Mm-hmm.
He hops on the Concorde. Okay. Now get this. There's a TV crew following him around recording this whole deal.
Of course.
Okay. And he bumps into Cher, who is on the plane.
Okay.
Okay. And she sees all these cameras and stuff. And so she goes to the bathroom. She comes back. She's like, Phil, what's going on? He's like, you don't know this Live Aid?
Yeah.
And she's like, no, I don't know anything about it. He's like, wow, I just performed it at Wembley. I'm going to Philadelphia. And she's like, can you get me on? And he's like, I'm not a talent agent, but you're Cher. I mean,
yeah, you're Cher.
Come with me and we'll do this, right?
Yeah.
So Cher's like, I'll join you and we'll do this in Philadelphia. Okay. Let me back up a second.
Okay.
His buddy Robert Plant, like leading up to this event.
Yeah.
Says, are you doing this deal Live Aid? And Phil's like, yeah, I'm doing it. And Robert Plant's like, maybe you can get me on. And Phil's like, you're Robert Plant. You can get yourself on.
Right.
So anyway, Phil contacts Bob Geldof and says, Robert Plant wants to do something. So, and this is months before.
Right.
And Robert Plant says, maybe I'll call Jimmy. As in...
Jimmy Page. Yes.
Which, of course, Led Zeppelin had not gotten back together since John Bonham's death.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
So Phil is already doing his own thing. And then next thing he knows, he's going to drum for Robert Plant, who's going to do a couple of songs.
Uh-huh.
Jimmy Page is going to join him. Also, all of a sudden, John Paul Jones is involved.
So it is literally all of Led Zeppelin, and Phil is taking the place of John Bonham.
Yes. But all of this... I think Phil had his head in the sand a little bit. He didn't realize that he was stepping into a Led Zeppelin reunion, okay?
Yeah.
So he performs at Wembley. He hits the Concorde, bumps into Cher. He's going over to Philadelphia. They, you know, Robert said, hey, we're going to do a couple of Led Zeppelin songs. Phil knows all the songs. He's a fan of Led Zeppelin. Mm-hmm. Well, he gets over there. Well, the drummer from Chic has been rehearsing with these three guys. And, of course, they're back together on stage for a reunion. And Phil's like, wait a minute. Maybe I need to bow out. Like, this is not my... They're like, no, you, and Robert Plant's like, you can't bow now. This is, we're getting ready to go on stage.
Yeah.
So Phil's like, well, okay, I guess I'll join you. So he talks to, I think his name is Tony Thompson. He's the drummer for Chic.
Yeah.
And he's like, hey, listen, two drummers. What are you going to do? What are you thinking? Well, he's like not interested in hearing anything from Phil. So Phil feels like, I got Robert Plant involved in this, and now I'm like the fifth wheel.
Right.
And I'm stepping into a Led Zeppelin reunion of which I was not fully aware that this is what was happening.
Right, yeah.
So Phil catches the Concord, comes back. He plays on stage with Led Zeppelin as the reunion, but it is billed as a disaster afterwards.
Oh.
And guess who gets the blame?
Phil. Of course.
Yeah. He says, if you go back and look, and I did, he says, I'm playing air drums. He says, I'm just trying to hide and not get in the way. Uh-huh. And he's just not hitting anything. Oh, wow. And he took the blame for it.
That's tragic.
And Led Zeppelin has done everything they can to scrub it from the Live Aid history.
Yeah.
So.
Huh.
Kind of interesting.
So what, did Cher perform?
So the rest of the story is, Phil does his set. He also plays with Eric Clapton. Yeah. He also plays in the Led Zeppelin reunion.
Clapton played in the Led Zeppelin?
Clapton played on his own at Live Aid.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Yeah, yeah.
Phil played with him.
Gotcha, yeah.
Phil joined Led Zeppelin in the reunion, of which he says he really didn't realize that was what was happening.
Right.
He was supposed to sing We Are the World at the end, but he was so embarrassed and so humiliated and felt like a jerk, and he's like, I'm out of here. I'm going to the hotel. So when he got back to the hotel, he turned it on and for the end, and they're singing We Are the World, and all the people are there together, and who does he see singing We Are the World?
Cher
managed to get on stage, get a microphone, had no idea this was happening. Next thing you know, she's singing at Live Aid.
Wow, that's crazy. Yeah. That's fun. What a good story. That's fantastic, man.
It kind of went all over the place, but...
Okay, I think we got to keep moving.
Next song on the album is a song called I Don't Want to Know.
Okay, so this is one that you needed the album for, right?
Yeah.
Not a single.
No.
Could have been a single.
Think so?
I think it sounds like it had that single potential, and if I'd have heard it over and over on the radio again, I might have fallen in love with it like I did the other songs.
I think he just has a knack for writing catchy, hooky, fun, up-tempo stuff.
Yeah, and so the lyrics of this song are really all about she's not going to get me back. She can try, she can cry, I'm not coming back. Now, we kind of touched on this, that the first two solo albums that he did were basically a love letter to his wife who had divorced him, right?
Yeah.
And he was just doing everything. Now, he wasn't very tactful about it. Like, if I saw you drowning, I wouldn't lend a hand. It's probably not the way to win your wife back. But that was what it was.
Neither is putting a paint can on the piano.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So there's a whole other story there where she, I mean, do we want to go there?
Let's go there.
So here it is. So whenever Genesis hits it big with Phil singing, his wife, he's like, hey, we're making it big. We got to go tour the U.S. And his wife at the time is like, who used to be a backup singer in his original band in high school, you know? They met when they were 11. They've known each other for decades.
Childhood sweethearts.
And she's like, you know, you're putting the band as a priority over me, and you've done it for years, and I'm not going to deal with this anymore. And he was like, but I have to go do this. You know, we have to make it big in the U.S. if we're going to make it at all. And she said, if you go do this, I'm not going to be here when you get back.
Right.
And she was true to her word.
Yeah, she was.
She found another guy while he was off on tour, because he left anyway, thinking, I'll work it out.
He told her, he said, just wait a couple of weeks. I'll be home.
Yeah.
Well, they were getting their house redecorated.
Painted.
And one of the painters, she was very blatant, like, that's the dude. That's who I've been with. What are you going to do about it?
Right.
Yeah. And kind of in his face about it.
Yeah.
And so when he performed In the Air Tonight, I think on Top of the Pops, he had a paint can on the piano as a
nod.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a tumultuous relationship, but one that he always wanted to get back together until he finally decided, I don't care anymore. I don't care anymore. And I think this song is in that same vein of, hey, it's over.
Rumor has it that Phil divorced his second wife by fax. Did you hear this?
No. Is this Jill?
This is Jill.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll talk about Jill here in just a second.
Okay.
Next song on the album, One More Night.
All right. Couples move to the center of the dance floor.
This is a makeout classic from 1985.
100%.
I think this is great. I like the verses actually more than I even like the chorus. And the chorus is a number one hit feeling song.
Both hooky melodies in the verse and the chorus for sure.
Yep. This is his second number one after Against All Odds. Mm-hmm. Okay. This is released in January of 85. It hits number one March in 85 in the States. Here's your top five.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, number five, We Are the World.
Okay.
Coming up like a rocket.
On its way up, not on its way down. Yes. Gotcha. Yeah.
Number four, Lover Girl by Tina Marie.
Yep.
Talked about her on our Top Gun soundtrack episode.
That's right.
Number three, Can't Fight This Feeling by REO Speedwagon.
Which we will be covering soon when we do REO Speedwagon versus, who are we doing them against?
Rush.
Yeah, that's right. Plan. Ooh, that's the spoiler. Ooh, we just spoiled it.
Number two is Material Girl.
Okay.
Which never made it to number one.
Wow.
Because One More Night held it off
at
number one until We Are the World was like, no, we're not bowling everything out of the way.
Right.
This song was used in the movie The Color of Money.
Okay. Yeah.
Scorsese, Tom Cruise, Paul Newman.
Yeah, kind of a part two to The Hustler.
Yes.
Yeah.
This music video.
Tom Cruise with a perm.
Yeah. This music video was shot at that same, the Sussudio pub.
Right.
They call it the Princess Victoria, owned by Richard Branson. Mm-hmm. And the song, the lyrics are like, before we end this relationship, just give me one more night to try to work this thing out.
Right.
Great song. Number one hit. Makeout classic.
Absolutely.
Okay?
Yep.
All right. Hit stop on your tape player. Kick it out. Flip it over for side two. Side two starts off with a song called Don't Lose My Number.
I'm hoping against hope that you've got the story behind this song.
I have the story.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're going to be happy with it.
Okay. I mean, this isn't a love song.
Right.
Like, it seems like a cloak and daggers, spies and shadows and chasing on the street kind of stuff. What's going on here?
You know, Billy, don't forget my number. Because you're not anywhere that I can't find you.
Like, Billy's my contact that I got to have, right?
So people, this is like Sussudio. People are like, what does this song mean?
Yeah.
Feels like, I don't know. I don't know, right? They're just words that came out of my mouth, and I wrote them down, and it became a number four hit.
Well, I mean, that works.
This song is released July 1st, basically the same day that Sussudio hits number one.
Okay.
Number five, you have Oh Sheila by Ready for the World.
I heard that today. Everybody thought that was Prince in disguise, and that Sheila was Sheila E., right?
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Number four, Don't Lose My Number, Phil Collins.
Yeah.
Okay. Number three, Freedom by Wham.
It's one of my favorites. Yeah, go ahead.
Number two, Cherish by Kool & the Gang.
Oh, yeah. Kool & Gang re-emerging. Yeah.
Yes. And then number one, Money for Nothing by Dire Straits.
You can't beat that, man. Okay. G-man-y.
Did you watch this video?
No.
Oh, man. This is such a great 80s video.
Okay.
So it's a music video about making music videos. Okay.
Yep.
So it starts off and Phil's sitting on a desk like the every dude he is. And he's talking to a reporter and he's like, so anyway, that's why I call it No Jacket Required, which I thought was a great hook, right?
Right.
Right. And his assistant comes in and is like, Phil, the director for your next music video wants to talk to you. And he's like, oh, great. Send him in, whatever. And the director comes in, Phil sticks out his hand and he walks right by. And he looks at him, he's like, John Wayne. And Phil's like, Robert Redford? And he's like, Gary Cooper. And he's like, Clint Eastwood. And they just keep kind of this weird exchange, right? Uh-huh. And made to feel uncomfortable because the director's so weird.
Right, right.
But then they both look at each other at the same time and they go, Mal Craigs, right? And I was like, who in the heck is Mal Craigs, right? Yeah, this has to be an inside joke, right?
Right, right, yeah.
So Mal Craigs was like the head of the roadies for Phil Collins. So it's some joke, some guy on his crew that he's just like
that's
making
hysterical.
A joke.
Hysterical. That's great.
So, but the video is like, what is this video is going to be about, right?
Mm, yeah.
So you have a scene where Phil is clearly Mad Max, right?
Right, right.
And you have the Old West and he's a cowboy. And then you have him parodying like the David Lee Roth California Girls.
Yes, he's doing the dance.
He's
with
dancing
the
around.
The white cane. And
yeah. One of the girls is Jill, his wife, which I thought was kind of cute.
That is
right?
Hilarious, yes.
And then you got the Shogun. They're making fun of the You Might Think video from the Cars.
Uh-huh.
This one guy's trying to convince him that, you know, you raise your crossbow and you shoot the guy. And he hits himself with an arrow and there's like blood. And feels like, oh, you know, I don't think this is really me. So the whole video is about making a video. And uh-huh. It's really cute. It's really fun.
Yeah.
Great 80s stuff. I loved it.
That's fantastic. So the video starts off. This is another interesting thing that you're going to tell us about.
Yes.
The video starts off and they're naming history, like they're naming some Western history movie stars, right?
Yes.
John Wayne, Clint Eastwood,
yes.
Robert Redford.
Yes.
Gary Cooper.
Yes.
Now, among all the awards that Phil has gotten, he got an honorary degree from the Berklee College of Music in music.
Uh-huh.
He also got an honorary degree in history.
Really?
Can you tell us why?
Well, I do know that he has a lifelong love and sort of fascination with the Alamo.
Yeah.
And he became a collector of all these documents, relics, weapons even, mm-hmm. of the Alamo. And I do know in 2014, he donated his entire private collection to the Alamo under the condition that the public could see it.
Yeah.
And he became awarded honorary Texan.
That's awesome.
In 2015.
Yes.
I think that's really cool.
It is fantastic.
And he actually does the narration for the tour.
That's so crazy.
I know,
you would
right?
You would have a guy, you know, from England, a blue-collar England accent, giving you the tour information for the Alamo.
I saw a video where Phil is waving around a sword that belonged to somebody important that fought
Santa Ana or one of the losers.
Some of them.
Sorry. Sorry for all of our Texas listeners.
They don't, you know, you don't get to keep the sword from the winners, do you? All right. Next song on the album.
Yeah.
Song called Who Said I Would.
Okay, so the first little intricate little clip that's maybe just 10 seconds long at the beginning of it gives me total Risky Business vibes of, you know, he's racing against the clock to try to get all of the furniture put back before the parents get home.
My egg, Joel.
But the song itself, this is like Susu Studio Part 2 to me. This is almost identical chord progression and beat.
It's upbeat. It's fun.
Yeah.
This is a great concert song. Mm-hmm. You know, this was not released as a single from No Jacket Required.
Right.
But they released the live version of it, and it became a top 100 hit in 1991.
Okay.
hit number 73.
Well, something.
Hey, this album is packed full of songs.
Right.
If they didn't get a hit the first time around, maybe they get it the second time around.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they made this to be a potential single on every single song, right?
Yep. Okay, next song on the album?
Yeah.
This song is called Doesn't Anyone Stay Together Anymore.
Okay.
I'm ready for this story. I've been waiting for this one.
This song is about people getting divorced.
Right.
At the time that he wrote it, Phil was not actually getting divorced, but had been divorced. And his manager was getting divorced and had friends getting divorced. And I'll tell you this, you know, since you mentioned that he divorced Jill by fax.
Right.
That original band that he put together back in grade school was a band called The Real Thing. And one of the backup singers for the band was Andrea Burritelli.
Andy, uh-huh.
Andy, his first, who later became his first wife, the yep. one that had the paint can to remind her.
Yes.
And the other backup singer was a friend named Lavinia Lang.
Uh-huh.
And while Phil was still married to Jill and on tour, he ran into Lavinia Lang again, and they hit it off in a big way.
Yeah.
And I think he sent the fax not too long after
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, yep. Doesn't anyone stay together anymore? Now, you got to tell the story about when he performed this. Do you know this story?
Well, so this is nuts, right? This right. is absolutely nuts. So obviously, by this time in history, he's already huge, right? And so... And huge, not only in the U.S., but, of course, in his home country
right.
of Britain, right?
Right.
Well, in the 80s, Britain had a prince. His name was Charles.
Prince Charles.
Prince Charles. And Prince Charles had his 40th birthday, and they were like, who do you want to perform? And he said, Phil Collins, of course.
Phil Collins.
And Phil performed this song.
Right.
Not realizing that just a few short weeks later... Charles and Diana would be also yeah. not staying together anymore.
Yeah. He told a story on his audiobook where he and Diana became pretty good friends. And... So he was friendly with her, even though she was royalty, whatever. And so he said one day he went to the dentist and had some dental work, and he came out, and a BMW pulls up, and somebody rolls down their window, and they're like, Phil, it's Princess Diana yelling at him from her car, right?
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And she says, what are you doing here? He's like, I just got some dental work, you know?
You're right.
And she's like, marvelous, I just had a colonoscopy. She said, you haven't done that. They're great. Then she drives off, and he turned to his assistant. He's like, did that just happen?
Is this the drugs? Are the yeah. drugs not worn off yet?
Right.
Oh, my gosh. That's hilarious.
I thought that was a great story.
I just had a colonoscopy. They're wonderful. They are not wonderful, by the way. That is a lie. That she was being sarcastic.
Yeah, either that or she was still coming down from whatever.
Right.
I like this song. I think it's a fun song. I think this could have been a hit as well.
He had the Princess of Wales joke about her bunghole to him. That's fantastic.
That's how comfortable people are with Phil Collins. I told great. You Phil Collins, despite being the second wealthiest drummer in the world and maybe the greatest drummer in the world, he still seems like a guy who would get a blotch of barbecue sauce on his shirt and not know about it. You know, he just seems like an every guy, you know?
He does. But yes, second only to Ringo Starr in drummer wealth in the UK and probably the most... money paid out in a divorce from his third wife, who yeah. we haven't even gotten to yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, something like 25 million pounds or something.
Well, yes.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Next song on the album. This song's called Inside Out.
Yeah. So Phil is definitely playing the drums and not the drum machine on this one.
Yeah, he's banging away.
Yeah.
It's that gated drum sound, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
This is a great song. I think this could be a hit as well.
Every single one, yeah.
This reached number 9 on the Hot Rocks chart.
Okay.
So, in some sense, it was a hit, even though it wasn't released as a single. This is a great concert song. I think just this whole album is just so much fun.
Yeah, you think they missed the boat on not releasing this as a single?
Yes. Well, everything he released turned to gold.
Right.
I think this could have turned to gold as well.
Sure.
I got a quote for you from Phil Collins on his popularity. He said, I know I was starting to annoy everybody on the periphery, but in my defense, I only wrote the song one time.
You know, we mentioned he's second wealthiest drummer next only to Ringo Starr, but he had the occasion when he was a much younger, much poorer drummer to play with a different Beatle. And to give us that story, we're going to bring back Chad Briggs. Chad?
So Phil Collins obviously was not part of the original Genesis. He did come fairly early on, but he was an operator, right? I mean, he knew the music scene, and the music scene in London at that time was, I mean, it was amazing. So there was a story, and this reminds me of your story of Mary Clayton from the Dirty Dancing soundtrack, right? He gets a call late at night, and they're saying, Phil, they're doing recording. They need a percussionist. He's like, oh, guys, come on. I just got out of the bath. I'm just watching TV. And he's like, no. This is George Harrison, Abbey Road. You need to get down here. Jumps into a taxi, screaming at the taxi driver, you know, get me to this place. Get me. He shows up. He walks into this room, and there's Ringo playing drums, George Harrison on guitar, Klaus Voormann on bass, Billy Preston on piano, Badfinger guitars, Maurice Gibb on keyboards. And guess who's the producer? Phil Spector.
Oh, wow. Okay.
again, a throwback to Dirty Dancing.
Yep.
Wow.
They spend hours playing. Now, they put Collins on conga. He's not a conga player, right? And so he's not sure if they're recording him, and he just keeps playing. Spector finally says, all right. Phil, you're on. And his fingers are bloody by this point. He's just not sure what's going on. Everyone leaves. They're in a different room. Someone tells him, all right, Phil, you can go. And he walks away. He's a teenager at this point. He doesn't know what's going on. The album comes out. He's not credited. And he knows that they used a slightly different version of the song, but it kind of eats away at Collins for years. Right. And then you fast forward to the 1980s. Phil Collins is a superstar in his own right now. He's still thinking about this album. He's still thinking about how he was not credited for anything on this George Harrison piece. So he mentions this to one of George Harrison's friends. Did they use me? Did they not use me? A couple days later, he gets a package in the mail from George Harrison with a tape inside and a note saying, we found the master tapes. You want to listen to it? There's even a note saying, was this you? And it's the conga drums. And it sounds horrible. Right, it's overdone. It's sort of a little bit offbeat, and Collins is just sitting there going, "Oh my god! I just screwed up so badly. How could I? You know?" And he's just thinking, George Harrison. I mean, he's like the king, and how did I screw up like this? The punchline is the tape was fake. George Harrison heard about this request. He put the band back together, re-recorded everything they'd done that night, but then turned to the person they brought in as a percussionist and said, overdo it. Like half beat ahead. just ruin it. Okay. Just ruin it. It was just the cruelest prank that they played on Phil Collins. But
and
imagine the effort you have to put in to say, all right. Yeah. We'll not just say that, yeah, we didn't use you. We're going to drive it in and try to make you think that, no, you were never part of it. In the
great story.
Fantastic. Oh my gosh, that was awful.
All right, last song on the tape, but not the last song on the CD. This song is called Take Me Home.
Okay, if I may quote Jason Colvin for the episode, this is the best song on the album, and I'm spiking the football. This is sonic perfection. This is 80s gold. The harmonies and build to the chorus are so fantastic. Far and away, favorite song of the album.
You were just playing that, and when you hit that big chorus, my eyes watered up.
That's what happened.
It's so good,
you
right?
You want to start pumping your fist and take me home, that's singing along with it, man. It's just
so good.
Now, here's the crazy thing. For my entire life, I thought that this song was very much like Home Sweet Home by Motley Crue. It's about, like, I'm tired of the road. I want to get back. It's not what it's about.
Tell me.
Blew my mind.
Yes.
So this is from the perspective of someone who is in a mental asylum, who always has that hope of, you know, someday I'm going to get out here and I'm going to go back to my home, even though they really have no recollection of what their home was really ever like. And it's based on Ken Kesey's book, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, which, of course, came out, Best Picture, 1975, year I was born, Jack Nicholson. Very impactful movie, but geez, what a great song that doesn't make me think of that movie at all.
It's a wonderful song, an absolute banger. I don't know how this didn't get to number one. It only reached number seven.
Yeah, this was the lowest, right?
It was the lowest.
This was of all of the singles on this album, this was his lowest. Which, I mean, how many people would love to have had a number seven song?
Of course, right?
But this blows my mind. Like, why? Why would this one?
Do you want to hear the six better songs?
You know that I do.
Okay, yeah. So Take Me Home tops out at number seven.
Right.
Which, no, it needs, come on, this needs to be higher.
Right.
Number six is Your Love by The Outfield, which is a banger song.
Dude, huge. Again, for the third time this episode, go check out our Patreon page so that you can hear the full story on that song.
Right. Number five, Live to Tell, which one of Madonna's best songs.
Okay.
It's kind of a softer ballad from her.
Okay.
Number four is What Have You Done For Me Lately by Janet Jackson.
Sure. I don't think it's better than this right. song. As a matter of fact, I don't think that the Madonna song is either. Your Love, I can see being ahead of it.
But okay.
Yeah.
Number three, Why Can't This Be Love by Van Halen. It's a good one.
Okay, yeah.
Number two, West End Girls by the Pet Shop Boys.
Oh, gosh, that was huge.
It's a good song, right?
That's a really big one, yeah.
And then number one is The Greatest Love of All by Whitney Houston.
Jeez, okay.
I mean, it was a rocket ship.
Yeah. Well, so there's at least a handful of definite, you know, maybe these songs are better.
It's a pretty strong list right there.
All of them, but gee, Manny, this is why we talk about the 80s, guys, because back when.
So good.
You had a top 10 like that.
I want to talk about the video of this song real quick.
Okay. Yeah.
Because this took time, effort, foresight, discipline even. Parts of this video are filmed in London, Paris, Tokyo, New York, Sydney, Bremen, Memphis, LA, you know, Hollywood, Stockholm, San Francisco, Kyoto, Chicago, St. Louis, Houston. So you've got to kind of dedicate yourself to making a video all around the globe.
Right.
And it's, you know, here I am. He's at the Golden Gate Bridge. Take me home. I'm at the Sydney Opera House. Take me home. You know,
yeah.
I'm in New York. Take me home. I think it's so fun. It's so great.
And then the end of the video, he finally gets home. He's excited to be home. He opens the door and his wife's immediately like, have you been at the pub again?
Always something funny with him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I sent you a song this week called Home by Bone Thugs and Harmony.
Yeah.
And I listened to it, and it's obviously it's rap.
Yeah.
But I thought it was awesome.
Yeah.
And then Phil is bringing the Take Me Home chorus in there.
So this is great because Bone Thugs and Harmony, I mean, I wasn't listening to rap at the time. This was around 2000.
Is that something like right? that,
okay,
yeah.
Yeah. So I wasn't really listening to rap in the year 2000.
Right.
But I had to be under a rock not to hear of Bone Thugs and Harmony. And so these guys did what all kinds of rap musicians have done for many decades now, which is sample some music. And they wanted to sample this Take Me Home song because they love it.
Right.
Right? Because it's a fantastic song.
It's irresistible.
And so they say to him, hey, can we is it okay? They asked permission. They didn't, you know, they didn't two life crew it.
Right.
They went and asked for permission for right. it. And he was like, yeah, okay, yeah, that'll be fine. And they're like, will you be in the video?
Right.
And he's like, you know, I don't really know. They go to London to meet him and say, please. Please, we want you to be in the video. We want you to, and by him agreeing to do that, then they get that full chorus. They get him singing Take Me Home.
Yeah.
And he's in the video, and he's very in the background until it hits that Take Me Home point, and then he's just looking at the camera singing the song. It's great.
It's so great, right?
It is really great.
Yeah. All right. Let's go to the last song on the CD. This song is called We Said Hello Goodbye.
We said goodbye to a dear old friend, and we packed our bags and left, feeling sad, it's the only way.
Okay, so we have a minute-long kind of classical interlude here, and then we get an echoey piano.
Yes.
And it's got very much that Jackson Brown feel to me of just him at the piano on the stage. The piano's got a little bit of an echo effect on it, a little delay. And then the drums come in, and those drums coming in are so Ringo Starr.
Okay.
And then when he's playing, like, he's channeling Ringo on this one. This is a Ringo drum riff, if I could call one.
All right. Step back.
Okay.
D, this is the best song on the album.
Whoa!
I am spiking the football.
Turn your head, don't look back. Just set your sails for a new horizon. Don't turn around, don't look down.
Wow.
This song went with every graduation video from my years of growing up. So this is like 88 to 92 was like a part of every graduation video. Turn your head, don't look back, set your sails for a new horizon. It's the perfect graduation song.
Yeah.
I love this song, and I absolutely love Take Me Home. But this song was not released as a single until it was on the Playing for Keeps soundtrack.
Oh, wow.
It didn't chart. But to me, this makes me wipe tears. I absolutely love this song.
Okay.
So.
Wow. You're coming strong on that one. That's impressive.
Oh, I love it. Okay. I absolutely love it. All right, people. That is No Jacket Required. That's the end of it.
Yeah. So we've gone through two of the three, and we've done a pretty good job of not talking about Genesis as much as it obviously is in this conversation of Peter Gabriel and Phil Collins. But come back next week, and we will be talking all kinds of Genesis because we're going to be talking about the album Invisible Touch.
See you next week.
Bye, guys.
Holmes.
Rupert Holmes on our Patreon episode that is not sung by Rupert Holmes, but it is a good one. You should come check it out. You can go do that by going to our Patreon page.
Yes.
I'm totally interrupted the... That interrupts the flow. No, start over
it's
again.
It's fine.
You sure?
Well, now the flow's interrupted.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.